of a garage inside a funeral parlour. He'd finished cleaning the inside, so he closed the doors and the windows to begin cleaning the outside. As he'd done many, many times before. But after he closed the doors and wound up the windows, the first time he'd ever seen steam come on the inside of the windows. The inside of the windows all steamed up until you couldn't see what was going on inside. He couldn't see past the clouded windows. You know what it's like sometimes in the weather in Australia, where sometimes your windscreen of your car steams up and you have to either wipe it or turn the windscreen wiper on or do something, heat it up to make sure all that steam disappears so you can see, you know, where you're going. This was happening inside the hearse. That was strange, but still not scary. But what happened next really freaked him out. On those clouded windows, handprints appeared. The prints of a hand, first one place, then another place, on the inside of the funeral hearse. Something inside was trying to get out. But of course, you know, I don't know what he did, open the doors. Because, you know, ghosts are welcome at funeral parlors. And I asked her, I said, well, when you're in that funeral parlor, have you ever seen a ghost? You know what she said to me? She said, of course. That's part of my job. When I see working in the funeral parlor, maybe in the office, I often see the ghosts of people who've just died. That's what she said to me. So what do you do? Well, say sometimes I'm just working in the office, doing some typing, and I look at the open door, and I see one of the ghosts walk past. And he said, I tell him, get back in your box. That's what she said. That's how she said. I'll never forget her telling me that. Get back in your box, ghost. Because the ghosts were just thinking outside the box. Walking outside the box. But anyway, the ghosts were never, never, ever scary, which is nice. And just to finish off about ghost stories, I never expected to talk about ghost stories, talk about something more inspiring. Actually, it isn't quite inspiring. But the story I often tell, many people know this story about ghosts, is to make sure you're not afraid of them. And again, another true story about one of these gentlemen years ago who was working as a builder's labourer, renovating a house in Mount Lawley. No, not far from here. And, no, I won't tell you who his wife is. He died some time ago, but you all know his wife. I won't tell you that she was Bianca. Oops. But she doesn't mind. And she validated the story many times. But anyway, late on a Friday afternoon, not dark yet. People think that ghosts only come out at night time. I often wondered that when I was told that ghosts only come out at night time, I wonder what do they do during the daytime? Do they sleep or go to the movies or just hang around and meditate or what do they do? But no, they come out in the afternoon as well. So he was being the most junior laborer on the building site. He was the last person to leave. And he was just doing some cleaning up. And as he was doing the cleaning up, he heard this sound. Put your hand under here. Put your hand under here. You know those old buildings in North Perth and Mount Lawley, they were built on stumps. They didn't have the concrete floors, had wooden floors built on stumps in case there was any flooding. Maybe you've lived in a house like that. So when he said, put your hand under here, there wasn't under here to put his hand in. But he thought that no, there's no one around at all. He thought he was imagining it. So he just carried on. But then he heard the voice even louder and clearer. Put your hand under here. So being young and being courageous, having nothing much to lose, he put his hand underneath the house. And he explored with his hand. He couldn't see what was underneath the house. He just put his hand under there. And he felt and felt. You know what he found? There was a tin box. You know those old tin boxes which people have? Not the old the plastic boxes, but the tin ones. And he felt it and he pulled it out. And this is no exaggeration. Inside that box, when he opened it, there was thousands of dollars. And he used that money for the deposit on his first house. And he found out later on that that's the reason they were renovating the house, because the previous owner had died. And the previous owner didn't like paying tax, so he hid his money under the house. And now he had died and he didn't know what to do with it. So the ghost saw this man and thought, oh, this is a really good fellow. And so he decided to let this man have that money. So if ever you go past an old house and you hear the sound, put your hand under here. What should you do? Run. That's what you probably do. But no, a lot of times, there's so many stories that are collected over these years that many ghosts are just, they're kind beings. They're just like they were when they died. They just want to finish off and make sure that anything which is not left, still undone, they can actually have finished off, which is wonderful. But anyway, that's the end of life and ghosts. This is supposed to be a little talk about the end of the year. And of course, many of you have not died. You're not going to die yet. So a lot of times at the end of a year, we always remember what happened in the past year. What have you learned from the past year? Don't ever think, how much have I earned? How's my finances? What have I happened to my relationships, my kids, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes that I always remember that what is real wealth in our life? It's not the money we have in the bank, because sometimes the government taxes it or somebody scams it, or money comes and money goes. It mostly goes. But what is the most important wealth in your life? I remember telling the story to someone when someone asked me about my family. What did I inherit from my family? Nothing. Financially. I think finally my mother died. My brother called me and said, oh, just now we're both orphans, he called it. He has a funny sense of humor as well. I was about 60 at the time. And he said that, I've just gone through my mother's finances. And he said, I've counted it all, and it's only about $5,000. That's how much he had. Because he never owned a property, never owned a car. Just that's all she had in the bank. So what do you want to do, call a lawyer? Or I just split it 50-50. So we called a lawyer. The lawyer would say 80%, and we might get 1% left each after government taxes. So instead, sort of, he just sent a couple of $1,000, I think it was, to the Buddhist monastery. And that was my inheritance. But I say that's not what I inherited from my father and mother. Because what you really inherited was just all the great wisdom and kindness and examples which your parents show you as a kid. And I always say to this day, that was my inheritance. You know, things like, as you know, that story of my father telling me that the door of his heart will always be open to me, no matter what I ever do. And that was worth so much more than thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And sometimes I feel sorry for people who are the children of rich people, and their parents have hundreds of thousands of dollars and houses, and they give their children all this stuff. I think I inherited much more valuable things than that. And it's great wisdom and kindness and love, you know, which are good examples, you know, which my parents showed me. I also remember the times when they argued because we lived in a small house, not a big house, because they couldn't escape from one another when they were shouting at each other. And of course, as kids, we heard that. They couldn't pretend it didn't exist. They said, as you know, husband and wife, they sometimes have arguments. But the wonderful thing about those arguments, I also saw them when they made up. I saw them argue, but I saw them say sorry to one another. And to me, that was almost worth seeing the argument, seeing that two adults say, sorry, I shouldn't have done that, and hug and kiss, and be husband and wife again. I saw that as a kid. What I saw was the reality of life, not trying to hide it, not trying to pretend it doesn't exist, but how to deal with it. So it doesn't really matter who's right and who's wrong. In fact, if we have an argument, we're both wrong. We're not looking at, I'm not sure when I last told this story. Those of you who have been to my marriage ceremonies, who were married when I was there giving you the blessing, you all know this story. It's a golden oldie. Here it comes, about the chicken and the duck. Good old story. In fact, apparently, that when I last saw someone in Sri Lanka, said, that's one of my favorite stories over there. They talk about Ajahn Brahm, the chicken and the duck monk. I'm just going to move around. Oh. Here we go. So the chicken and the duck story goes like this, if you haven't heard it before. That this was a couple, and they'd been married not that long. And they were walking in the park one afternoon after lunch. And as they were walking in the park, they heard a sound. It wasn't the sound, put your hand under here. It was a non-human sound. Quack, quack. And straight away, is there a cushion there?
No, I'm cushionless.
Oh, thank you.
Very good.
Oh, that's much better. I've been sitting here for 3 hours. Yes, better. Quack, quack. And straight away the girl heard that sound, the wife. She said, oh, darling, can you hear that? I've got one here for you. It's very kind. You were too slow there. You missed a good chance of making some merit. So, quack, quack. And straight away she said, oh, darling, can you hear that chicken? And he said, did you say chicken? Yeah, it's a chicken. You know what men are like. They said, that's not a chicken, that is a duck. Ducks go quack, quack, not chickens. And so, straight away, she said, no, I am sure that is a chicken. He said, it's not, it's a duck. And he went quack, quack again. It's a duck. Said, no, it's a chicken. It is a duck. It's a chicken. She's starting to feel really, really upset. And that, just before she burst into tears, that is when he became wise. You know why? Because he'd been to this temple before. Or he'd read my book where I tell the story. No, it's a... I think you may be right, he said. I think it may be a chicken. It went quack, quack again. Oh yeah, that's a chicken. And she looked in his eyes as he squeezed her hand gently. He said, thank you, darling. And he said, no trouble at all. And they walked away in peace, in harmony, in love, and that evening you got a hot dinner. So, the moral of that story, the reason why I tell it, is who cares whether it's a chicken or a duck? Is that a reason to go and see the lawyer and get grounds for a divorce? It's only just a stupid argument which sometimes we make. So first of all, he saw that what is more important in life than being right or being rich is having a good relationship together, being in love, being in peace. And also, I don't know how many times you think you're right. Are you? And afterwards you find out you were wrong. That could have been a chicken from Fukushima nuclear disaster zone, mutated to sound like a duck. So anyway, it doesn't matter who's right and who's wrong. The most important thing is we live in peace and harmony together over these small matters. You know, I really, really wanted to send that story to Mr. Trump. It doesn't always have to be right. I've got to move again. Oh, so nice. There we go, that's better. But what I really mean there is that sometimes we have the great inheritance, we learn that harmony with one another does not need to be sacrificed because we want to be right. Especially we don't know if we're right or we're wrong. Sometimes we get it wrong. So little by little, we learn by coming to a place like this about some wise attitudes to life. Ways of solving problems so we don't need to have all these horrible arguments with our family and friends. How we can let go of some of the pains of the past which we have to go through. And how we can learn to let go. A lot of times that people find it very difficult to let go of the very painful experiences in our past. And sometimes we want to blame other people. Often we want to blame ourselves. Maybe I could have done more for my mum before she passed away. Maybe I could have done something different, you know, in my marriage or in my business. It's amazing just how many people are totally innocent, still blame themselves. For a long time I couldn't understand why people are so critical to themselves. It was because that we do lack a sense of self-respect and forgiveness and kindness to ourselves. And if you ever do something wrong, if you ever are at fault, tell other people about it. Because if you tell other people about the mistakes you've made in life, you find those mistakes are so small. I remember, so many cases. The first time I saw this, there was a gentleman who, he respected the Buddhist monks, although he wasn't a Buddhist himself. And he brought his 14-year-old schoolgirl daughter to see me because she was very depressed. And I asked, well, what are you depressed about? He said, I can't say. And it took me a long time to gain her trust so she would actually tell me the cause of her lack of self-esteem. You know what was causing her lack of self-esteem? She had a big nose. And that's what I did first of all. I thought, this is crazy. I wanted to get a ruler out and measure her nose. Because I was a scientist before. And do a statistical analysis of 14-year-old girls' noses. And try and prove to her that her nose was pretty normal and natural, and it was not big, it wasn't small, it wasn't particularly sexy or particularly not so. It was just a girl's nose, that's all. But all the time which I was talking to her, she would not admit it, that her nose was ordinary. Because sometimes when we focus on some fault we have, we focus on it so much, and we obsess about it, and it becomes exaggerated. Not really what's there, but it's a much worse problem. And part of my life as a monk, whatever problems people have in their life, is trying to just lessen the obsession with it, to see it more in focus. And of course, the simile which I use is a simile of the hand. You know that simile? How big is my hand? How big is my hand? It's actually really big. It's so big, I can't see any of you in this room. I can't see the night sky, I can't see the lights outside. My hand is now so big, it's the only thing which I can see. What is my problem here? Is my hand too big? Or is it too close to me? Am I obsessing about it? Of course, I'm obsessing about it. When I put my hand where it belongs, at the end of my arm, then I can see all of you, and my hand as well. My hand is not such a big problem. You know, that was a simile which I've been using here for such a long time, because it's simple and it works. But when I was in Singapore at a psychology conference a few years ago, people were showing me some of their friends in the psychology business. And they said there was this one psychologist over in Sydney who was making a lot of money, and he had his therapy. And his therapy was, how big is my hand? The closer I hold it to my face and I can't see anything else in the whole world, put your hand where it belongs at the end of your arm and it's not a problem anymore. I didn't know whether to laugh or call my lawyer to sue the guy, because I invented that. But of course you don't want to sue anybody. I'm just glad that something like that has been spread around, because it really works and helps people. Simple message to be able to put our problems in perspective. So, not 2020, all the problems you've had, yay, you've survived. How many people here didn't survive? How many ghosts are here? People want to see a ghost. You've survived, well done. Had problems, difficulties, and sometimes not being able to visit your friends and relations overseas, but they're fine. They haven't been able to visit you either. But you always be able to visit them over YouTube or Skype or Zoom or whatever. So there's always ways and means, and we learn in our difficult times how to cope, how to look at different ways of looking at life. I always say, and this was one of the questions in the quiz earlier, what is the, you can't change the world, but you can always change your relationship to the world. In other words, to work with whatever happens in the world, rather than complain about it. Why should it be like this? And that is again something which we learn here. Do you want to complain about anything? Have you ever noticed that in the Buddhist Society of West Australia, we don't have a complaints box? Do you want to complain about that? You can if you want, but there's no box to put your complaint in. Somebody did that once. The reason why we don't have that, they tried that once in another Buddhist society, and their complaints box got full the first hour. Donation box takes much longer to fill up. But no. Because instead of complaining about whatever's happening in this world, we just learn from it, we grow from it, and we sort of somehow or other make it better. And that's actually how we don't try and change life, we change our relationship to it. And there's beautiful kindness and happiness and joy, that brings a sweet part to our life. And of course that's what we learn, that's what I learned from my parents. They didn't have much money. Hardly any money, but they still had a very happy life together, and they still, you know, did very well in school and eventually became a monk. And really sad that my father never had an opportunity to see me as a monk. He would never believed it, I'd become a monk. He would never believe that I got to a big university. but nevertheless, he would be very proud. And always at this time, at the end of a year, and I don't know, it's almost like a tradition to think of all the people who passed away. You know, the old Lang Syne chant, which they used to do in the West, which actually that means more of those people will never be able to meet again. Thank you for being our friends, and we let you go. And we let you go with a sense of thank you for all you've done for us. And it's, instead of thinking of that we've lost something, the end of a year of a passing, it's what we've gained. All the wonderful things you've had in your past year. Experience, sometimes painful experiences. Sometimes some of you crying in front of me because things didn't go the way you expected. But you know, after a while, all those tears is what is water for the ocean, for the gardens. All the problems is a fertilizer, which makes those gardens blossom and bloom. You always look at life a different way as a monk. That's also just what I learned from my family, my biological family. So it's a way we can come to places like this and again meet friends we would not meet in any other place. Friends from nations which, you know, you weren't born in. People you weren't from the same village as. You're not part of your biological family, but really good people. People you can trust who are honest, keeping precepts. You can sit next to, you can talk to, and just invite for dinner or lunch another time. I love it when people do that. So you can have a much wider friendship, because that is your inheritance, that is your wealth. How many friends you have. Good friends, kind friends, trusted friends. Because if money runs out, you always have friends to look after you. If any difficulty happens, it's your friends and family are always there for you. That's what's truly important. And what time is it? 11:40. So I should finish off now, because we usually do a little bit of meditation before we actually... Well, no, I can tell this last story. Again, I haven't told it for quite a while yet. It's in one of my books. I love telling stories. And if we do meditation, I can already see a few people yawning. So I can't do a long meditation, otherwise it'll be a long yawning meditation. So that was a story, I don't know if you remember it. It's written in one of my books, the story of the man with the four wives. How many people remember that story, the man with the four wives? Wow! Okay, you've got really bad memories. But once there was this man with four wives. And he was a very successful man, which is why he could afford, I suppose, having four wives. And towards the end of his life, he was on his deathbed. The doctor would say he hasn't got that long to live. And so he asked his fourth wife, the youngest of them all, the prettiest of them all, the one which he gave so much jewelry and fine clothes to. He invited her in by his bedside and said, "Darling, I'm sure you know that I'm about to pass away. I love you very much, fourth wife. You're so beautiful. Do you love me?" He said, "Yes, of course I love you." "Well then," said the old man, "will you come into death with me? I will miss you." He said, "No way! Don't you remember at the marriage ceremony we said, 'Till death us do part'?" He said, "No, I can't do that." He said, "But what I will do for you, darling, I will be there at the funeral for you, and I will say wonderful stories about you. Oh, your great qualities. That's what I will do at the funeral, but nothing more. What? You said you'd love me forever and you're not going to come into death with me. Get out. So he sent his fourth wife away and he invited his third wife in. His third wife, he married her just before, well, quite a while actually, before his last wife, his fourth wife. And asked his third wife the same question. And the third wife, she was also really beautiful, had lots of jewelry and nice clothes and stuff, a bit older. But you know that sometimes, you know, guys, they looked at the third wife, they wanted her more than the fourth wife. She was really attractive, but for a different reason. And so he said, darling, I'm going to die soon. I can't face the idea of going into death alone. And you said how much you love me, so darling, will you come into death with me? And she said, no, it's never been done before, and I'm not going to do it now. But she and the guy said, oh, look, I gave you so much. She said, yes, I know, but I've already got it figured out. After you die, I'll make sure you get a wonderful funeral service, the very best. But after you die, I'm going to stay with your son. What? That's adultery. That is terrible. What do you mean you're going to live with my son? Get out of here, you shameless girl. And so he sent her out as well. And then he asked his second wife in. He married his second wife a long time ago. And asked his second wife the same question. The second wife was a bit shabby, but, you know, the second wife was, you know, she was always there for him. Anytime he was in a problem or difficulty, he would always rely on his second wife. And he asked her, he said, darling, you know, I'm a bit disappointed by those other two hussies. But when I'm going to die soon, will you come with me into death? And she looked at him with sad eyes and said, I would if I could, but I can't, therefore I won't. I'll come as far as the graveside. I'll come to the edge of the graveside for you, but I can't go any further. I just can't. Again, he was disappointed. Get out. And then he invited his first wife in. He'd been with his first wife such a long time. He didn't even remember when he married her. She was always there, it seemed. And she was, you know, even more ill-kept, I suppose. He hardly paid her any attention at all. But when she came into the room, she smiled at him. He felt a little bit reassured. Can you imagine what he felt when he asked her, will you come into death with me? And she said, of course. Wherever you go, I always go with you. Don't you remember my name? It's called Mrs. Karma. Wherever you go, I will go with you. Even though you haven't looked after me that well. Your second wife, called Mrs. Family. Mrs. Family will go to your graveside. Would be very sad, and sometimes the family would think, if I could, I would, but I can't, therefore I won't. And they'll always look after you and care for you, even though you don't spend as much time with them as you should. And the third wife was called Mrs. Wealth. Mrs. Wealth makes many things possible for you. And at your funeral, we'll give you a really good funeral service. But after you die, we'll go with your children. Go with your son. He will inherit you. And the fourth wife was called Mrs. Fame. That's your reputation, which after many, many years gets attached to you. And your reputation can say wonderful things about you at a funeral. What great things you've achieved in this life, but it can't go further than that. Mrs. Fame cannot go with you into death. And that's the story of the man with the four wives, or the woman with the four husbands, or the single person with the four friends, dogs, cats, I don't know. But anyway, you know what's really important in life. And that's an old story, but it's a beautiful story. What you can really rely upon in this life to look after you, again, is your good karma. And good karma, it doesn't just mean just putting money in the box. And actually, this is true. This is what Venerable Sampa told me, because Venerable Sampa, he with one of the Anagarikas, Paul, empties our donation box at Bodhinyana Monastery. And in the hall donation box, he said he did actually find in there a spider. It's a suicidal spider I keep talking about. He's actually taken up residence in the donation box at Bodhinyana Monastery. But anyway, that's another story whatsoever. So thank you for listening. Now we've got about 10 minutes to have a nice quiet meditation. Get nice and peaceful. Please no yawning. It's only 10 minutes. 10 minutes, a little bit. Sada. And after that, when it gets to 12 midnight, then the two monks here will do a blessing chant for you to get the wonderful good energy for 2021, for your happiness and well-being. So here we go. So please close your eyes. I'll give the guided meditation for the first 5 minutes, so it's really easy. Thank you. Hamming it up as usual. Here we go. So please close your eyes. With your eyes closed, try and get your body as comfortable as possible in this limited space. I know sometimes you'd like to lay out, but there's too many people in the way. So just sitting down gives you a bit more space. And a simple thing, once you're sitting down, just ask your body, is it comfortable? Whenever you ask a question of your body, you get an answer. It's similar to you go and see a doctor, say, and the doctor said, "Now, how's your leg today?" And you can give him an answer. It's, you know, it's a bit sore, or it's healing really well, or there's no problem there. So when you ask a question of your own body, you get an answer. And you can use that answer to make sure your body is sitting comfortably. And if it's not sitting comfortably, just adjust it, move it. If you've got an itchy nose, scratch it. That's what I'm going to do. If you've got an itchy somewhere else, you can scratch it because the camera's not on you. It's on me. And whether you want to straighten up your back, I want to straighten up my back, give it a good stretch, and it feels good. I use what we call awareness of my bodily feelings, to check up the whole of my body, starting with my legs. Legs, how are you? How are your legs? If you want to adjust them, please do so. How's your butt? Do you want to move it forward or back on the cushion or chair? How's your back and your torso? Is everything there nice and comfortable, or do you want to move it left, right, or stretch it to make it extra comfortable? Often seen like animals, especially, you know how dogs, before they lay down on a cushion, they just go round and round and round till they get the most comfortable spot. And relax your shoulders. And relax your arms and hands. You know, if you feel those arms and hands, and then ask them to relax, they do. and go up to the neck, making sure the head is well balanced on top of the neck so it doesn't cause aches and pains in the neck. And then to your face, last of all. And especially to notice any tightness, tension around the mouth, the nose, or the eyes. Because such tension is usually demonstrates emotional negativity somewhere inside. Things like fear, anxiety. So relax all those muscles in your face. So around the eyes is at ease, around the mouth at ease. And then just be aware of your whole body relaxed to the max. And if you've been doing this a long time like I have, then you can relax the body so well. It feels not just comfortable, it feels delightfully comfortable. It's the pleasure of relaxation. And it's one of the first and the easiest of benefits you can feel in your meditation. Having a beautiful body which is at ease. And I don't usually start the meditation until my body is really relaxed. But I'm aware, I'm not asleep. And only then do I start looking at my mind. And I usually start with what we call peaceometer. How peaceful are you right now? How agitated? Whatever the cause for agitation will live in the past. Whatever's the cause for fear and anxiety lives in the future. If somehow or other we can let go of the past. It's going into the new year, so we should have an incentive to let go of all the difficulties, pain, disappointments of 2020. It's a new year. New opportunities. New start. But as for any fears of the future, have a positive attitude to the next year. Because who knows what unexpected joys, understandings, meetings with people you haven't met before, or just wonderful friends or companions. I always look at the future with a very positive mind. That's why positive things come into my future. So the mind begins to relax in peace. And where you find peace of mind, you always find that one of the causes of peace of mind is just kindness. Not fighting the world, but making peace with it. Right now, making peace with yourself. Being here. Very often people like going off into the future or revisiting the past. In meditation we just stay here. Being now. I'm going to be quiet while I wait for the signal for midnight and the new year to come. So I need a couple of minutes. So please be in this moment and wait. With peace and joy in your heart.
Very close. The clock has now turned to 2021. It's a new year. New opportunities. New hope. A new start. The monks will now give the blessing to welcome you to this wonderful new year full of possibilities. Sabba roga vinimuto, sabba santa pavajito, sabba verabati kando niputo, chatuang pavasabitio. We were chant to Sabarogo, we nasatu mate, Bawan wantarayo, Sukiti gayugopawa, Api wadan hasi, Litsani chang. Uta pachalino chataro dhamma watanti ayuano sukhang phalang. And Happy New Year, everybody. That's giving a bit of extra oomph to the New Year chant. And hopefully that oomph will carry into everything you do in 2021. Yay! Happy New Year, everybody. Very good. Happy New Year to everybody. And I wish you a safe journey home. Please find a policeman if you can. Get your breath tested. When they ask you, where have you been? You say, we've been to a party. Have you been drinking? Of course you've been drinking. Tea and water, orange juice. And have a wonderful evening. All the best to you. Bye. I'll be up here for a few minutes. Yeah.